Well, last week, I had the chance to testify a bit about God's goodness, and really, I used the text that Christ speaks on about being the vine and how we are the branches. And that really impacted me as we traveled this last year. For those of you who weren't here last week, shame on you, first of all. joking. But if you weren't here last week, I am an English professor and a world literature professor at Concordia University in Irvine. We have a unique program there called the Around the World Semester. It's a five-month trip that I lead with my family and a few other great leaders. And we go all around the world, 10 countries, and we work with different missionaries and churches, nonprofits. One of the key goals is to learn about how people are making a difference in their communities. And we learn from them, and it's fantastic. As we travel, I teach five courses. Literature, writing, service, and some basic linguistics. And that's a great time as well. The students are very interested in learning in that context because they are learning at the point of need. And that is one of the best ways to learn and the best places to learn at the point of need, when you realize you have some serious questions. And so it's a thrill for me as a professor. It's also a wonder for me as a dad. And so that's kind of my transition comment. Today, we're going to continue with the idea of really testifying about how good God is, but also about how God is actively moving his vine, the vine of truth, the vine of hope, the vine of goodness all around the world, how he is raising up faithful men and women all around the world to spread the gospel. And so each of my family members here is going to talk a little bit about where they saw God's vine growing around the world, how they saw really God's vine in their own hearts as well. There are three kind of things that we talked about as we were traveling, three ways that I've kind of brought this into focus for myself. One is I've seen God work in our hearts in perspective, changing our perspectives about him, about the world, about culture, and so forth. So it's a perspective changer. Jack's going to talk a little about perspective. Naomi's going to talk a little bit about passion. There's three P's. I'm going toward three P's here. The second one is passion. How God, really by drawing us into different ministries, by drawing us into different seasons of growth, works on our passions. Maybe dismantles some harmful passions and reassembles God-fearing good passions in us. And Naomi's going to talk a little bit about that. And then Erica, what is the third one again? Sorry, should we change it last second? What was it again? Plan, yes, thank you. What was mine originally? Sorry, preparation. I had been talking about this preparation, but Erica had a different take, which is great. And Erica's, you picked, yeah, she was right along the line. All this was supposed to be said behind the scenes. Sorry, you had to see that. But anyway, God's plan and how God moves and works and creates plans. And in some ways, similar to the passion, perhaps dismantling our plan, right? Dismantling our plan, what we think is our plan. And he says, yeah, okay, good try. I'm gonna make this better. And we praise him when he does that, do we not? We have plans, we have purposes, and we have ideas we want to do. And he says, yes, good try, but here's something better for you. Right? And then we praise him, do we not? And that's a great moment. So first up here, please welcome with a hearty cheer, Jack Norton. Jesus. Teeing him up, this is perspective.
Okay, I wrote this down because I didn't want to forget it, and this isn't really my thing. So here we go. In Rwanda, we stayed at a YWAM camp. YWAM is a ministry training center. Our host was a man named Antoine. He lived in Rwanda during the time of the genocide. And most of his family died. He was 14 years old during the genocide. His mom and brother were killed and he had to run. He hid on the streets for months, escaping death. He drank and was mad at God. His sister was the only survivor, and she never stopped praying for him after living for years with no hope and turned his life over to Jesus. His trust in God has grown from it, and now he is a man of great faith. He trusts and relies on God more than anyone I have ever met. When he first started working at YWAM, he had no financial support. He had no money and had a lot of debt. He felt that God was telling him to stay, so he did. He loved to preach and tell people about Jesus. One day, he went to preach at a church, and after the service, the pastor came up to him. The pastor asked Antoine if he had any debt. He said, yes, and the pastor said he would pay for all of his debt. I was amazed when I heard this story. I learned so much from Antoine about God and how to trust him more. So that was it, and that's how I learned to trust, like, if I just trust God, that he will provide. Yeah.
Okay. So Jack likes to say this is not his thing, but the reason I picked this idea of perspective and I thought of you and I've told this story about you the same way, is because I really saw Jack, the way his heart transformed to Rwanda was really amazing. I saw him come alongside this guy, Antoine, and he became a great friend to you. He was a neat guy, very good basketball player too, and he's just a really neat young man. He's in his early 30s. But Jack just stuck to him because he saw, I believe, the Holy Spirit in this man's life in a very powerful way. And I think you saw something very powerful, like you said, like nothing you've ever seen before. And so a really beautiful perspective changer. And God is faithful to change our perspective like that. And so, cool. All right, thank you, Jack. Now, Naomi has a very tender heart for children with special needs. And God really worked this time in some powerful ways that were probably a little bit unexpected. And so Naomi's going to talk about passion.
How do I move this? Like that?
There you go, yeah.
Okay. Can you guys hear me? There we go. I wrote mine down too, but I'm also going to share from my journal that I was writing in on the trip. So on this trip, I felt like God especially touched my heart in India and China. This was my second time to Calcutta working in the Mother Teresa homes with the special needs kids. Me and Jack were trusted more this time by the sisters, and one example of this was with a girl named Josie. And this is what I wrote in my journal about her. Okay. There was a little girl named Josie who was dropped off at the homes halfway through our time there. She was so scared of everyone, and she wouldn't even eat. If you tried to comfort her or get close to her, she would scream and yell and push you away. One of the days there, me and Jack were coming down from doing laundry to see Josie sitting alone on the floor in the middle of the main room. Me and Jack were scared to go near her because we didn't want her to make her upset. A sister ran by us and pointed with hand motions to sit with Josie. We sat down next to her and didn't want to scare her, so we didn't know what to do. We started trying to be funny and make her laugh, but it wasn't really working. Jack did something and got kind of close to her, and I pushed him away because I was afraid that he would scare her. This made her start to smile, and I was like, oh, okay. So I pushed him harder, and he, on purpose, like, fell back super dramatically, and she started dying laughing, so that was good. And she wanted to try it herself, so she pushed him, and he fell back again and again, and this made her laugh more and more every time. So in China, I also felt this, and I didn't expect to fall in love so much with the children at Shepherd's Field, a home for kids with special needs in China. Our last day there, I wrote this in my journal. Today we had to say goodbye to Shepherd's Field. I spent the whole day with the kids and didn't want to waste a minute of it. When it was time to take the kids home, I was holding a little boy named Thomas. He started getting fussy and was crying a little bit. I started crying because I didn't want to say goodbye. And when I started crying harder, Thomas stopped crying and looked at me with a puzzled look and then started nestling into me and wiped my face. I will never forget these kids, and I will always be praying for their forever families. So.
Okay, so I need to brag on Naomi a little bit. She's 5'1 now. And today is her birthday. Pretty sweet. Naomi is not the tallest person in our family. She, and yet, she packs a punch. She has been given a fire that is so wonderful to watch as we travel. She is one who is a go-getter. She sees children and she's drawn to them in a powerful way. I think it's got to be the Holy Spirit in her. in very different cultures and very different settings. She mentioned the sisters at the Mother Teresa homes. I talked about them last week. They're the Jedi, right, of Calcutta. Unbelievable. Naomi won their respect in about 10 seconds. They saw in her perhaps what I see is this powerful woman of God, this woman where the Holy Spirit is indwelling, and they began to give her all kinds of responsibilities. They gave her responsibilities last time we were there too, and it was a little more frightening because it was puja and you kind of worked your way into that relationship, but it was so wonderful to see this passion develop in her that really allowed her to push a lot of fear away and just dive in to settings, hospital settings in India especially, that are a bit off-putting or can be a little bit difficult. And so I'm so proud of this 5'1" ball of fire and passion that God has equipped and is equipping more and more each day. So good job, ma'am. Well, Erica put together a really great video, and plans. This is Erica's part here. Let me just have Erica teed up. What I will say about this is this: I love leading this program. I am the leader of it. I'm the leader of the program. Oh, jeez. But as you know us as a couple, you know that Erica is such a driving, passionate force for the church, for the kingdom, for evangelism, for so many other things that God has equipped her for. We have grown a lot in our marriage through this process of leading this team, and I depend on her so heavily for insight, for discernment, and it's really been really neat. It hasn't been without challenges, as you can imagine, if you're married, but it's been awesome. Most of the time, it's me learning to say sorry, and you were right. Those are hard words for a big guy like me to say with a PhD. You know what I'm saying? Erica is the heart of our program, and she has allowed this thing by her discernment and her ability to draw a family and a team together. She's really been the key to the success of this program, so I'll let you take from here.
Nice. Okay. Well, yes, if I'm going to fit into Dr. Norton sermon, I got to have my 3 points. So I'm point three, and I am plan. But truly, though, it was a good word for me to speak on, because I spoke a little bit at the women's night a month ago when I first got home, and this trip was marked by, many times on this trip, it was marked by us having a plan, but God's plan always ended up being better. And our plans got changed many times. We had to change countries on the fly on this trip, where countries were closed to us and we had to switch. We had contacts, our missionaries who were going to host us not be able to, had to switch. There was changes on this trip. And over again, we saw that God's plan was always better than our plan, and that he had our good and our best in his mind and his interest for us. And so it started to become kind of a fun thing. It was unsettling at first, but it started to become fun kind of towards the middle to end of it, once we learned our lesson a little bit with it, that God was going to always lead us the better way than our plan. And so that's just one little tidbit. But the other way that I saw this is, it goes back to what he was talking about last week with the vine and God just moving. I mean, one of my favorite things about this trip, I feel like it's such a privilege to get to go see. And so I always want to make sure I do my best to then testify to what God's doing when I get back with family and friends, because we've had this privilege of seeing God move in 10 countries in 5 months. It's a very fast-paced trip. But to intentionally see every day the way that God is moving throughout the earth is one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. And to meet the people that God's using is incredible. And so I wanted to give you a few stories, because they grew my faith on the trip, and I want to testify and grow your faith through some of these stories. And like you said, I did put together a video. It's a little different than I've normally done. It's more videos within the video. to hopefully give you a taste of our journey and see and hear some of the sounds of the trip and see what we've been doing. And so how Jack just talked about Antoine, you're going to see, when it gets to Rwanda, you're going to see a picture of Antoine and Jack. And when you now see the video, you're going to see Shepherd's Field, the children we worked with in China and the children we worked with in India. So I wanted to share a few more now before it so that you have the full picture. So as you're watching it, you know these stories. So Greece and Germany, we had the privilege of working with a church there, a church in Greece and a church in Germany. And I feel like I saw some of the most incredible God plans, like not the pastor's original plan. The original plan of this pastor in Greece was to have his church with everyone pretty much from Athens, Greek, just a good old neighborhood church. And then, as many of you know, 5 years ago, the refugee crisis has been happening, obviously, in that whole part of the world. So much of the Middle East, moving out of the Middle East for the unimaginable, if you hear those stories. When we were in Greece, we worked with this pastor who, like I said, that had probably been his original plan. And he was a good pastor, and he had a good congregation. And then guess who started coming? Droves and droves of refugees. And the crisis was right in front of them. And so to hear how this church, he said it was work at first. He goes, my congregation, they were scared. My congregation didn't want to step out of their comfort zone. My congregation didn't want to give up just their comfy time together. Didn't want to give up their potluck after church that was just their group of people. Was not used to that. He says, and it took some work, but he said, our church, we started cooking meals and taking them down to the abandoned airport and bringing meals every day. A few ladies from the church would come, make huge pots of soup, go down, started befriending the refugees. They stepped so far out of their comfort zone, it was inspiring. It was inspiring to see. And it was inspiring to see because now there are, how many did we meet? I mean, we met quite a few, but how many do you think are in their church now?
Probably 50 or 60.
50 or 60. They're all men from Iran, and they have all given their lives to Jesus. They were so proud to tell us that. They would come up to us and in broken English, I Christian. And they just come, these big, strong, like looking men would come up to me, I Christian. Like just because they could not wait to tell, want to see my baptism? And they had their baptisms all videoed on their iPhones. And they would show me their baptism over and over again. They wanted to show us their baptisms. So proud, so in love with Jesus, so passionate. Young men are now being raised up. There was a man we met from Iran, Zidane. And just a year and a half ago, he was a refugee, was just touched by this pastor, came to Jesus. He's such a passionate man. God already has put so much in him that now he leads on Friday nights. Hundreds of Muslims are coming to their church fellowship room, and he has almost like a Q&A time all about Jesus, about Christianity, and they have a meal. So when we were there, we got to go to that night, that dinner, and just meet a lot of these families and to hear their stories. It was just a beautiful picture of the plan of this church had never been in their plan. And now the heart that it took them a while, it was a growing process, but the heart of this pastor and the heart of this church, how it has changed for really the outsiders, the people who weren't supposed to be going to their church when this church had started, and the plan was just so beautiful. It was inspiring to see what they are doing. My other story, it actually is very similar, is in Germany. We went to two different churches. Our very first church was in Berlin, Germany. And I don't know if many of you have been to Europe lately, but the churches are not busting at the seams. The church it, for at least what we have seen compared to the other continents and other nations, is definitely drifting far away from God in Europe, far away. The churches are mostly museums, are mostly beautiful to go into, but maybe 10 people want to come to church. Huge, gorgeous cathedrals just left lifeless and a very godless place. Not to say there aren't some really wonderful churches springing up there. I'm not saying that. But many of the churches we saw, that was the feeling. One church in particular was a church in Berlin, and this pastor, you spoke about him a little bit last week, but he had maybe 20, 30 people, little Lutheran church in Berlin, still standing strong, but they had like 20 members, and barely anyone wanted to go to church anymore. And then,
giant church.
Yeah, giant facility, 20 people for years. And this pastor got a little fire in his belly, and he got a fire, and he talked about him yesterday. He learned Arabic, he speaks English, and he speaks German. And he just started just loving on everyone that was moving into their city. And he told this story last week, but now this church, hundreds and hundreds of people in this church, jam-packed into the aisle to get up to take communion, jam-packed to get up for prayer. So much passion for Jesus. And I don't think that was in that church's plan ever in the beginning. The other story is in Germany as well. We spent our 2 weeks in Leipzig working with, in every country we always work with a missionary or a church or some sort of NGO as our contact, and that's who, you know, makes us feel kind of at home for those 2 weeks. We try and get to know them. We serve with them, with our students. That's kind of our routine. So in Germany, for our 2 weeks, we were in Leipzig. And it's in East Germany. I just want to say that correctly. East Germany. And this church has been around. I'm going to have to look at you for some of the facts of this one. So this church has been around since early part of the 20th century, and it was in the woods. They kind of had it tucked away because it was back when you really shouldn't have a church, so in Germany. And so they had kind of, so they could try and do their own thing and worship Jesus and have kind of this tucked away church. They've been there that way for a long time. Now, fast forward all these years later, picture this side of the city that's kind of a depressed side, lower income, a lot of homeless, and kind of tall, high-rise kind of project homes around a square. And right in the side of, like on three sides, and on the fourth side is this gorgeous, gorgeous brick, red brick, old, old, old church since
1890.
You're like my fact checker. 1890. Old church. Okay, so picture this little church, this little congregation that had been meeting in the woods for so long. They, a couple years ago, felt the desire to come move their little safe spot, move to this square, and they bought this little, or rented, this little room in the corner of one of the buildings to start a ministry there to the homeless in the area, and most people living in now these project homes was all refugees. So they decided to move there. This pastor as well learned Farsi.
Yeah, he did.
He learned Farsi because all these refugees in this area are from Iran. So he learned Farsi. He's a South African pastor living in Germany that knows German and has a heart for the Iranians. Never been to Iran, but he has a heart for the Iranians who now have all come to him. Thousands and thousands refugees in Leipzig. So he gets a heart, he moves there, or moves just a little, like a storefront to kind of have this ministry base. They start feeling like this is gonna be a place. Well, this is such a cool story. The government says this huge, 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 huge brick, gorgeous building, you'll see in a minute, is available. And the long story short is they start getting to talks of what would it be to get this church. But it needs to be restored. But it's a building and it's waiting. This church. Talk about like the favor of God on this little church and this pastor who had this heart. They ended up getting this building for €1. That's $1, $1.20. A whole church. A whole gigantic, gorgeous building for €1. They get it for €1, but they have to restore it. So they start the restoration process. And I mean, you were in heaven. We ended up finding out about the history of this place. It was where Bonhoeffer, like they wrote letters from like the resistance, like formed in this church. And they used to write letters to Bonhoeffer back in the early German days. I mean, it's just crazy stories. So this is where our church, I mean, this is where our group came in. We pretty much for 2 weeks got to just destroy. Our college students and Jack especially were in heaven. Our job was to like take old things out of like high, creaky, scary looking bell towers and carry them down and smash them. And we were pretty much like free labor for 2 weeks. Imagine all us college kids and these kids. And so on the surface, it could look like we were just doing like, what, are we just like fixer-upper now? Like that's like what our group was, is we were just doing labor for 2 weeks at this church. It was probably one of my favorite things we did the entire time, because there was so much meaning behind being a part of this church and what they were restoring this church for, and that this old church was going to have like new life in this really depressed area, very depressed feeling area. And he got like the organ working. Like the organ hasn't been on in 30 years or something. They didn't think it worked. And all of a sudden, we couldn't find John for like an hour. We're all doing projects, and I haven't seen him in like a long time. And when we got the tour the first day, like the guy was showing us the whole church, so we knew what we were doing. He walked by the organ. Of course, John was like, does this thing work? Because it's all the pipes and just gorgeous. And he's like, oh, it hasn't worked forever. And so, of course, John like logged that in his brain. And so then a couple days later, we just can't find John, and I'm out front, and they're smashing stuff, and all of a sudden we hear, dun, dun, dun. I mean, it sounded like the Phantom of the Opera. And then we all were like, oh, and even the pastor, everyone from there like, we haven't heard this organ in forever. And so we all go running in, and it's like blaring. I mean, it was on like the loudest this organ could go, just echoing through. The whole neighborhood could hear it echoing. And I'm like, where's John? We haven't seen John in a long time. And so we go running up to the balcony, and there's John just like, in heaven, playing this loud organ. but it was a joy to work with. Every afternoon, we would finish working, and then they would make us soup and bread. We'd have like soup for dinner, and different, you know, refugees from their church would come. On Sunday, we had church, and it was as if we were in Iran. I mean, the worship was in Farsi. He spoke, South African German pastors preaching in Farsi. It was just such a beautiful thing. It was one more story of like the plan for this area. That hadn't been in their plan. But I think I just over and over again on this trip, I just kept seeing beautiful stories of God putting something in someone's heart and like a new plan, like a new beautiful plan. Kept unfolding. And then when we went to Guatemala, which you'll see in the very end, we met a woman who, it was not in her plan either. She's from Mobile, Alabama. She goes to Charles Simpson's church. She grew up there. She's had a very difficult life and a divorce and many different hardships. It was never her plan to move to the hills of Guatemala. And now in her 60s, probably about 60 years old, she has moved to Robinal, Guatemala. I guarantee none of you in this room have heard of Robinal, Guatemala. And she just loves these children and the elderly of this village. And she's given her whole life now. Like, talk about a different plan. She was like Mobile, Alabama lady. And all of a sudden, she goes down a couple times, has such a heart change, and now she has a new plan. And her plan is so beautiful, and it's exactly God chose this for her, and she was obedient to follow. So meeting heroes like this were so inspiring to me and to us as a family and to us as a team, to see people obedient to God's call And their plan was completely changed, and God had a whole new plan for them. And I walked away feeling completely encouraged, completely inspired to hold my plans loosely and see where God's going to take us. And I know so many in this room, I know so many of your stories, and your plan was this, and now you're this way, and it's not how you wanted, but with hands held loosely, God is making it so beautiful. And God can use you, God can change it, none of these people did it without a cost. None of these people did it without going through pain and going through hard things. It wasn't an easy change of plan, but man, would they testify that God's been good and he has led them. So that is how I saw God moving this time. God is like, wow, really changing things up. I feel like really changing people's hearts and starting new things. So we're going to end with giving you a taste of our trip, and we're done.